The reason we only stock D'Addario strings is because D'Addario strings are perfect.
When people come in here, they think that we get them for free or something like that, but we don't. We have no other reason except for dependability and tone.
Hey y'all, like and subscribe and you won't miss any of this great content coming your way. Now, back to the rundown.
Let's do it.
Hey everybody, I'm with Marty Stewart in the CMA Theater. Marty, thanks so much for joining us today.
We finally made it.
Yeah.
We've been trying to do this for a long time.
Since I got this gig, I've been pitching, trying to get this video. So I'm so glad, I'm so glad you got Clarence with you.
I'm glad I have Clarence with me. You know, Clarence is like a band member.
Oh yeah.
And this guitar is a thing unto itself. It really is, it really is. Talk about rig rundown. This is one of those guitars. There's not another one like it that looks like it, sounds like it, feels like it. You can plug it into a tree and it still sounds good. It can't help itself.
I've seen you play that. I saw you play that at Fanfare years ago and it was pouring rain. And you were standing out there just getting it, man, in the rain. It, packed out. It was back when it was at the motorway.
Yeah.
And
well, this guitar has a following. You know that.
Oh yeah.
And it is Clarence. It is Clarence's guitar. I've played it probably since the 1980s when I got it.
Yeah. Back with Cash, right?
Yeah. That was the first. That's when I got it. But it's still in my mind, it's Clarence's. The greatest thing that happened. When I first got this guitar, I didn't know how to play it. I didn't go up there to Susie and Clarence's wife's. I did not go up there to buy this guitar. I had no idea she wanted to sell it. But I left there, she decided I needed to be the caretaker of it, and I didn't know how to play it. And the first thing I heard was, "You don't deserve it." I went, "I'm the first to agree with you." But the word got out, and now, as you said, I was working with Johnny Cash's band. And we played, I think, in Massachusetts. And this guy was walking toward me, he was like, and I could tell it was about the guitar, and I just handed it to him. And he started crying, and he put his arms around it, and he just said, "What?" And it was Dinky Dawson. Uh-huh. And Dinky was the Byrds sound man. Uh-huh. And he was the guy that took care of Clarence's guitar. And I told him the story, and he was so kind. He sent me hours and hours of board tapes of the Byrds. And, you know, anytime I think I've gained anything on this guitar, I go listen to a board tape and go, woodshed.
God, that's, well, you know, it's funny.
And there's a thousand stories like that.
Oh, and everybody, I mean, everybody in Nashville, in my generation, man, we are all chasing what you're doing on that guitar. It's so inspiring. Oh. All your playing. I mean, I guess you probably were starting at ground zero with your first V-Bender, but man, you've set the... you set the bar really high.
So many good Bender players, and I was talking to Gene Parsons the other day,
yeah,
and Joe Glaser, and they're saying that B-Bender sales are like out the roof.
Right.
Everybody wants a B-Bender now, and that's good. You know, Kenny plays one with 1,000 Benders on it, and I love it. He's good at it.
Yeah. Hey, what does this mystery plunger do?
Okay, this is the only thing that I've modified two things in this guitar. Clarence had the Scruggs peg on the fifth string.
Oh.
They played Nashville West and I think maybe So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star or some of those songs.
Oh yeah.
And Clarence hit it in an open tuning. I couldn't get anything going. My strings are heavier than his, so I moved it up here. And the only other thing is this. I was at Ralph Mooney's house one night and I was really into a song that Merle Haggard had recorded called Drink Up and Be Somebody. And it had the quirkiest little lick. And I asked Mooney, I said, where did you guys come up with, like, him and Roy Nichols were playing? And he said, Roy came to pick me up for a session one day, and you had to go over a railroad track to get to my house. And he said, when he would go over the railroad track, the springs in his car would go, and said, he came to my door and said, Moon, I hear a lick in the squeak. So they got and rode around the block and went over the railroad tracks 4 or 5 times. And they both figured out a lick. And so when they got to the studio, it became Drink Up and Be Somebody. And the lick was...
Oh, yeah.
It lowers it a half step. And I was at Ralph's house, and I said, I wish my guitar would do that. He said, it will. Bring it to the garage. And he is the only person on planet Earth that I would trust.
Sure.
I looked, and he had a drill, and he went... And that's the bottom to the one of the legs of his steel guitars. And... you know, it's...
Oh, that's so cool. Man. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, Ralph Mooney, what a rock and roll steel player, man.
Everything inside me is either Ralph Mooney or Clarence White
or
Luther Perkins or something, or Gene Moles or some of those guys. You know, that's where it's at for me. I love it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I can tell you, and the band would probably back me up on this, this guitar, when it gets on the same stage with Roger McGuinn and Chris Hillman, something happens. It just does this. The sounds of those guitars, voices back together. And the Superlatives, we've done a lot of cool projects, but we got to be a part of the Byrds' 50th anniversary of the Sweetheart of the Rodeo deal. And so, but there was a moment, we played at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville. You ain't going nowhere. And Lloyd Green was sitting like right there, and he played the steel guitar part on this on the record.
Right.
You know? So that was one the intro, but the solo. Played that on the record, I go, please get it right today. And I looked at Lloyd and he went,
oh, that's great.
It made my night.
Yeah, oh, that is really inspiring.
This guitarist, if you go and listen to, Clarence was a session musician too. He played a song called The Cuckoo with the Everly Brothers. I can't play it, but man, it is so good. Mule Skinner Blues with the Mule Skinner Band, with him and David Grisman, Richard Green, and Peter Rowan and those guys. That's a great track. This Wheel's on Fire with the Byrds, and the Untold Untitled record. But he had so many beautiful things. But the beauty of this guitar is the length of the travel. I play most guys that build Benders these days are real short pulls. Pop.
Yeah.
Pop, pop.
Quick.
But this thing is like, ugh.
Right.
And if the reverb catches it just right, this like mushroom cloud happens. And if you listen to It's All Over Now, Baby Blue by the Byrds, this guitar is just like.
I was playing the Opry, I don't know, like 20 years ago, and you were there and you had Clarence, S.A. sounded like it. And I was like, oh, Clarence, you said, hey, you want to hold it? And I put it on, and I pulled down the bender, said, do it slow, you know, because I was doing it real fast, and it changed my life.
It's a different thing altogether.
Yeah,
Did you get the hang of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Show me.
Well, this, okay, well, let's.
I know you can do it.
Yeah, okay.
Hang on.
Still doing it too fast.
That's cool.
Yeah, really though, Marty, I am in debt. I think all of us are. Just, man, you put, as much as Clarence is brilliant and it, you know, invented it, but he didn't live long enough to like take it to the masses, and you did. So
I think about Clarence a lot. He was 29 years old when he died.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like doing this.
Right.
Can you imagine had he lived as innovative and as fearless as he was?
Oh yeah, he's a country Hendrix.
Taken it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's no end to his string.
Right.
He was so good. And where everybody misses it with Clarence is at the right hand. The right hand is deadly. I've never met Bob Warford. Bob Warford is a great bender player. His the solo that I love of his was Dark End of the Street on Linda Ronstadt's
Heart. Oh yeah,
like a
sure.
Record. That's textbook. And I've never met Bob, but he was a friend of Clarence's back in, you know, way back. And Clarence and he were pals. But Bob's right hand is probably close to Clarence as anybody I've ever heard. I just love what he plays. I do.
Yeah. I got bluegrass background. I mean,
yeah.
That's where it kind of locked
and
in.
That's where I related to Clarence a lot, because his brother Roland
got me
my job with Lester Flatt.
Right, you were on
13.
The road with him when
I
you were a
lived
kid.
At Roland's house.
God.
And there was a stack of Kentucky Colonels and Byrds records. I said, what's the deal with all the Byrds records? He said, my brother plays with the band. So that was the first time I heard this thing. But Clarence was one of those figures that he was from the bluegrass world like I was, but he was a California guy. He dressed cool. He was a rock star with country leanings.
Yeah.
And I set my sight on that when I was just a kid. I went, you know, he's a North Star figure.
Yeah.
And so I hope I've carried on that much of what was instilled by handing this guitar over.
Absolutely. Mission accomplished.
Oh,
okay, coolest guitar ever.
All right.
But as a backup, you got a 52 Esquire. That's not bad.
Honestly, this may be the best electric guitar I have. You can tune it and come back a week from now and it's still in tune. If I only knew how to turn it on. Mick!
Maybe, is it this tuner or?
Can I introduce you? When it's time for rig rundown, I run down Mick and say, help. This is Mick Connolly.
Hey, Mick. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. We got a switcher here.
Oh, there we go.
Come on, don't leave.
Yeah, Mick, stay close. We need you.
We need. Come,
stay close.
No, come here. I need
you. Yeah, our witness relocation program or something. You're trying to hide over there.
So, I mean, Mick is the superlative engineer, recording. He's the invisible superlative. And we've done, I don't know how many records together. We did 156 television shows, radio shows, and live shows.
Yeah.
He is my sonic identity. And I honestly can tell you that B string bender and that amp back there is my voice. But I look back there and I see a different color every now and then. So why don't you walk through what's on this rig? Come on, get over here.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, so what's going on after it leaves the guitar? What are we hitting on the ground over here?
First to the switcher between Clarence and the 52.
Okay.
Or whatever he decides to play that day. Sometimes a Gretsch.
Sure.
Pretty cool. It started out basically as just the big shot, which would just drive a longer cable and a little bit of boost. So it goes from here. There's an alternative reverb here that in case we get some kind of weird shaky stage or
sure.
we have an issue with the reverb. There's a fat mod in the signal, the Keeley, that is remote switchable through the JHS switchback.
Oh.
So off stage, if he needs a little bump on the solo, that adds a little bit of saturation, a little volume. And then if we want to use two amps, we've got another big shot ABY box here. We can actually add another amp for bigger shows.
Sure.
And then into the MXR EQ pedal. So take a little bit of the super top, a little bit of the super low stuff out, and just maybe a little mid-range bump.
Sure.
And this little preamp, this little Flamma thing, which was an experiment of mine, on the bigger shows, sometimes there's too much reverb. The volume, it gets a little bit muddy.
Sure.
So that is actually a deluxe that I tuned to sound as close as I could to the amp so that I can actually blend it in. I'm a front of house mixer, by the
yeah.
way. So that gives me a little more upfront sound without having too much reverb. That's basically the whole setup.
Yeah, it's about as close to a Tele through a deluxe as you're going to get.
That's
yeah.
all we need.
And let me tell you, that cannot be stated enough. The voice of the guitar, the amplifier. Yeah. I spent decades looking for the sound of that guitar where I went, that's it. In the 90s, we were way too loud. We played two twins.
I remember you had two twins on this side, too, on that side, and then your acoustic running through another twin.
I don't remember that. but two twins for this one, two twins for that one.
Oh, okay.
But, and then when we started doing television shows, Kenny and I started with Princeton's.
Yeah.
And Kenny was great on a Princeton, but I needed just a little more. There's something about that guitar that needed just a little more. And we went to California to do some shows,
and
one
date,
of those
yeah.
rare shows that we had to do a fly date. We went to Studio Instrument Rentals, and they had that amp mm-hmm. and another deluxe sitting next to it. And when I plugged into that amp, I saw palm trees and sunsets, and California popped out of the speaker. I went, this is the amp. And I took it and played it for like 3 days. I thought, I can't give this back. And so I basically called SIR in LA with the guy we were working with. I said, take my checkbook, you can have whatever you want to. And for some reason, he was a Clarence Flint fan. And we bought that amp from SIR, and that really is the amp that has given that guitar a whole other life in my head.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it doesn't need much help.
Yeah, yeah,
him,
no
especially
kidding.
With him playing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, amazing, amazing. So jumping between, so if you're not on Clarence, you're probably on this one.
Yeah. Bought this from Danny Shea. It was a great guitar dealer and a buddy up in New York City. I walked into his apartment in the Village, and it's like, good Lord. This is like a warehouse.
Right in his apartment.
Completely.
That was the store.
Crazy. Yeah. And when the Stones came through the town, when the Who came through town, when Dylan came through town, all those guys called on Shea. And this was a guitar, a 52 Esquire that belonged to Mick Ronson, I think, And there was a guy named Mark Kendrick that worked at the custom shop at Fender. And I think his dad owned this guitar at one time. And it truly is one of the best guitars I've ever played. It sustains for years. You can drop it, pick it back up, and it's good to go. I mean, I would think as a company, it's hard to start this good and then try to keep up with it for the rest of your life.
Can you believe it? They got it right the first time in 52. Right.
It's speaks for itself.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, man.
Okay, and when you're not on electric, you're going between that old friend mandolin you've had. Is that the one you've had since you were a kid?
Roland White had ordered this mandolin from a luthier in Pennsylvania named Chris Warner. And it was like a $650 mandolin, and for some reason Roland decided he didn't like it, but I liked it. And this goes back to, I guess, 1972. And he was about to send it back. I said, wait a minute. And I asked him, I said, do you mind if I buy it? He said, well, sure, take it. So I bought it for $650. And I had a Lloyd Lohr along the way, but I sold it and went back to this. It was just, wow. Just my old pal, you know. It's a great mandolin.
Hey, is that, did Johnny Cash do that?
He did that. And that. Back here somewhere.
Oh, that's great.
It didn't have a scratch on it. There it is, Johnny Cash.
Oh, that's great.
And I said, why did you do that? He said, I don't want you to forget the Lord. I went, well, I could have remembered that you recognized my mandolin.
Oh, that's great.
But this is the best signature on it right here. Doc Watson.
Oh,
Doc could never sign autographs. And he got one of those for Christmas one year, and I was playing with Doc and Merle for a few months. And I said, Doc, can I have your autograph? He said, just a minute, son. And that's great.
God, that is great.
Yeah, this is like a guest book.
Yo, absolutely.
One of my dear loved ones.
You know, that album you produce on the Sullivans, on Jerry and Tammy working on the building.
Yeah.
God, the mandolin work on that is just like mind-blowing.
You can tell it too. There's one spot, if you mic this mandolin right there, and what do you put on it? I always just say, give me a lot of long verb and dark and woody.
Well, live, you can just put a 57 on it and be done with it. You don't need anything esoteric. Sometimes we just put a ribbon.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a N22 AEA ribbon we use on it, and it's just sounds big as a house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, microphones.
Yes.
Our deal hit a whole nother level when AEA microphones came around, right?
Yep.
Wes Dooley. You know Wes?
No, I don't. But I was admiring those ribbon mics because they looked like it came off a German sub.
They make you sound important.
Yeah, you've been doing that a while. Okay, that's a great instrument. And then the last in the lineup.
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, my dream was to have a Fender guitar, and my dream was to have a Martin guitar when I was, you know, 9, 10 years old. And there was a fellow that worked at Martin for a long time named Dick Boak, artist relations fellow. Great guy. And he called me one day and said, how would you feel about a signature Martin guitar? I said, I feel great about it. So I took a 1939 D45 that I have, and we kind of copied the neck so it would feel more like an electric guitar neck.
Yeah.
Because I wanted it to kind of play like a bluegrass, or sound like a bluegrass guitar, but play like an electric guitar.
Sure.
And so Dick and I came up with all these things, and I think this is the prototype. Yep. From 1997, and it's just a good even.
Oh yeah.
And you can jump in on this. I don't care what the song is, but to me, if you have a great band, a great instrument, whatever you play, and the right thing in your heart, that will never go out of style.
Oh, right.
Right?
Exactly. Don't have much to add other than just having a great band. That makes my job easy.
Yeah, well, no kidding.
Push the faders up.
Yeah.
And so many of those, a great way to, if you want to buy a guitar and you want to check it out for real, there's so many guitars that look great on the floor of the music store and they sound okay, but then you put them in the middle of these guitars.
Right.
That's a good way to see what you really have.
Sure.
And a couple of guys have brought, one of my buddies out in Upper Northwest brought a 53 Tele out one day. And Kenny can tell you, it was just like, whoa. It didn't back up to anything or anybody. But it starts with a great instrument, I think.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what your pedals are. They help. They enhance. But if the ground of it all is a great instrument, you're there.
That's a great start. Yeah, and just standing in the room with this thing is, that's as good as it gets. I bet that's really opened up over the years.
It has. The first song I played this on was, I did a record called The Pilgrim. There was a song called Hobo's Prayer.
Yes.
You remember Hobo's Prayer?
That's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Thank you. I think.
God, you had Emmy Lou Harris on it, and you had, oh, God.
I had all my guitars. It looked like a guitar store in that studio when we were making that record. Had a lot of old friends hanging around the floor. But Hobo's Prayer was like,
right.
This guitar just kind of fit that song to me, and I fell in love with it during that song, and it's the one I take on the road. And it's a great, just a solid guitar. And what I'm proud of is people bring, I think they made 250 of these. And people bring them on the road sometimes and say, sign my guitar or whatever. And just about every one I've ever played, some better than others as always, but most of them are really good guitars. I'm proud of that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Marty, can't thank you enough for talking to us today. We're going to talk with your partner in crime, Kenny, now.
Oh, you're going
to
learn a lot there.
Oh, man.
Kenny knows everything.
That guy's amazing.
He's got it.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Kenny. You know what I love about Cuz is that the first time I spotted him on TV, he was playing with Lucinda Williams on Austin City Limits. And after about 1 minute, I forgot to look at Lucinda and watch Kenny. Sorry, Lucinda. But I've watched Kenny just do this as a guitar player. And he is truly a bona fide national, international guitar hero these days.
Absolutely.
To so many people. There's a lot of people out there making a lot of noise and playing good. But man, Cuz, he just keeps gaining on it. He never puts his guitar only cools off when he sleeps.
Right, right.
But people love Cuz, and I'm chief among them.
Yeah, genuinely a great guy too. Just a kind soul.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Hey, Marty, thanks a million.
All right.
Mick Conley
thank
says
you,
yeah, hey, Mick, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario's been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns. Okay, now I'm with Cousin Kenny Vaughn. Kenny, hey man, so good to see you.
Good to see you, man.
I'm so glad we got to do this.
How many years have we been trying to set this up?
Years.
It's more than three.
God, I know. Well, and it's funny, I first met you on Fanfare. You know how they have two
stages? I remember that.
And you're just the kindest, nicest guy.
I remember, that was
guy.
A long time ago.
No, like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't changed a bit.
Not a bit.
Hey, tell me about this guitar.
This is a three bender made by Wade Black over in Arkansas, I do believe. And so, you got that. So you got that, but you also have, you can switch your G bender on. You can do and then it also has an A bender that's on all the time, so you can do.
Wow. Oh man.
Yeah, you can do the Chuck Berry.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's really fun.
And you tell me, okay, so you talk to him about it, and
yeah, he'll make them, you know, however you want them, you know, as far as if you want a G bender, or a B bender, or an A bender, or whatever you want.
And so, what were your requests on this one?
Well, I wanted a pine body, okay, which he did.
What made you choose pine?
Well, I remember years ago I was at Matt Umanoff's store, and he had one of those old prototype tellies with the three and a side tuners.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They only made a couple of them at the shop before they really figured out what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen one of those things?
Not in real life.
Well, okay. No. Well, it's basically like a telly except for a three and a side headstock,
yeah,
and just one pickup, and but they made those out of pine, and I was like, man, this guitar sounds really good just sitting here. But I wasn't even plugged in. He said, oh, it's because it's a pine body. Huh. I was like, oh, wow, you know. So I have probably three or four tellies made with pine bodies.
Really?
And they just have a great sound. I have a Jazzmaster with a pine body.
Wow.
It sounds great.
I think, Leo, the word is, like, sometimes he would just go down to the lumber store and get what he could get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, but I think the pine bodies sound really cool.
Huh.
You know, they just have a certain resonance about them.
It's, with that guitar, God, in sound check, it just sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. You know, it's a maple cap. I ordered it that way, but he'll make it any way you want. And I wanted the truss rod adjustment at the heel, but he'll put it up there if you want it up there. Yeah. He'll do anything you want.
And you stuck with 21 frets.
Yeah. I'm just,
that's where you were raised?
Well, you know, I got my first Tele in 66, got my first Strat in 69. You know, I'm just like old school.
Yeah.
You know? I spent so much time trying to make those guitars work for me.
Yeah.
You know, with the, you know, the trebly thin sound, you know, and trying to, you know, it was easy to get the Buck Owens sound, but it was another thing to get Jimmy Page.
You know? Right. Yeah. You know? Right.
Yeah. I experimented with different kinds of amps, and you know, back in those days, you could buy vintage gear pretty cheap.
Yeah.
You know?
It was just used.
Yeah. It was just old gear.
Yeah.
That old amp, you know. So.
Okay. Well, speaking of amps,
that's a '67 Vibrolux.
Okay.
I have a 68 too that sounds really good. That seems to work real good on this gig. I've tried a lot of different amps.
Now, I see you're running into both channels. What's that about?
I'll get to that. I'll show you right now. This thing. We have this song called Tomahawk. And I've used this tuning on a couple of other songs that we've recorded over the years.
Was that on that Mike Campbell record?
Yes, it wasn't this guitar, but it was the same tuning.
Okay.
And so anyway, back in 1954 in Springfield, Missouri, they had the Springfield, what was it called? They had a country music show out of Springfield.
Hmm.
And they would import all the players from Nashville, like Grady Martin and Bob Moore and stuff, and fly up there in a private plane and do the show. It was a very popular show. It was called the something Jubilee or Jamboree or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called.
Somebody in the comments.
But it's a really good show.
Yeah.
And there was a guy, a company nearby Springfield called Stratatone.
Oh, yeah.
And they were the first company that made a double neck guitar with a 12-string electric neck. They were the first electric 12-string ever made.
Wow.
1954 that was out. And the deal was, Les Paul was the biggest thing on the planet at the time. He was number one over the world.
Rightfully so, yeah.
And he was making those records, you know, in his kitchen or hotel room or wherever with his wife, and he played all the sounds on his guitar. You know, there'd be like 12 tracks of Les's guitar. He'd play the snare drum and the bass drum, you know, and then he would, you know, bass and all this stuff just with one guitar. And then we'd harmonize those lightning fast licks. You know, and guitar players are like, they'd listen to that and say, well, we'll never be able to do that
right
on stage. And this guy, who I think he was a steel player, said, oh yeah. And he came up with this tuning for the 12 string. So I use this channel is just for this. I've got a little delay on it, you know. But it's tuned to an F major 9 chord. So they're all either major thirds or minor thirds. but none of the notes are where they're supposed to be. So we, like tonight, we're playing this.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Wow. That is so hip, man.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, I bet there's a learning curve on
that. Yeah, there is. But you know, I sometimes I'll take this thing to sessions and doing the, you know, like sort of like folky kind of trippy stuff, you know. Yeah. And I found out that I used to go see that band Genesis back in the 70s when Peter Gabriel was their lead singer, and they had two guys in the band that doubled on 12 string. The keyboard player had an acoustic 12 string with a mic on it in his lap, you know, and he would play this stuff like.
Right.
And so I've been using that kind of thing in the studio.
Oh.
You know, like I'll do it. Let me do an overdub, and I'll go in there. I don't tell anybody what I'm doing because you know it takes up time to explain what I'm doing. And they're like, "Oh, that's a nice part."
And you can't really explain that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Oh, so yeah,
you know, it's really cool.
Yeah.
But we use it for the razzle dazzle kind of boogie stuff, you know.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that is great.
And I've tried it on so many different guitars. And something about the Dan Electro with both pickups on, it really sounds good. And it's a flat radius and it's easy to play, you know.
Yeah.
And you can play pretty fast. And I have two Danos with this setup, one for the studio, one for live. And they're cheap guitars, but man, it works really well.
It's the bridge made the difference.
Has the, you know, 12-string adjustable bridge, you know, all
12. Yeah, the original Dano bridges were...
They sounded great.
Yeah.
The intonation wasn't always perfect, but they sounded great, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I have... I just use this different channel.
Just for that.
And I have a dedicated echo unit and a compressor just for that.
Just
one
for
guitar,
that magic sound.
Yeah, just for that, and it's not even, has nothing, it's just on the pedal board, but it's not hooked up to the rest of those pedals.
Speaking of pedal board, take me through some of the rest of it.
So, here, I have hundreds of pedals.
Sure.
You know.
Not surprised.
Too many.
Yeah.
You know, but I bought my first pedal in 1966. It was a Crown Fuzz Tone.
Cool.
And it was pretty cool. And then I bought my Fuzz Face used in 1969. I still have it.
Wow.
And I still have my Vox Wah-Wah that I bought in 68 with a carrying case. I still have that.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, it's got a carrying bag, says Vox on it, you know?
Your gig bag.
Yeah, right. My pedal board.
Yeah.
But I've been buying pedals my whole life, you know? So this is just my live thing. We had Marty added a song recently where he wanted a wah-wah, so this is one of those what is it called?
Yeah.
Exotic.
Okay.
It makes the wah-wah pedal. And you know, I mean, we were doing the song on stage, so I had to have a wah-wah pedal.
Sure.
So I threw that on there, you know, and it's like I'm playing this like it's got an echo. And here's the
it's like Jackie
stuff.
Blue.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How cool, man. So, what else you got on in this?
Okay. Well, I have my old. This is a Tube Screamer that Robert Keeley modified for me back around 25 years ago.
Really?
And
how great is that guy?
He's wonderful.
He is wonderful.
I have a lot of his pedals.
Yeah.
And I they're just so good. And I started, you know, I've used a lot of different pedals, but this particular pedal sounds really good. It always was good, but he modified it and it sounded better after he modified it. And I've never had another one that sounded quite like it. It's just an old Ibanez tube screamer, you know. Yeah. And it's a good sound for this band. It's a perfect. Just enough crunch for a certain. I don't use it on more than two or three songs. We have this one song that we're doing that Harry wrote. It's the title cut. The title cut of the new album is called Space Junk, and it's a song that Harry, our drummer, wrote. And when we recorded it, it has a drum intro, just him thing, and he wanted space noises. So being a big Jimi Hendrix fan, I saw him play three times live.
Did you really?
Yeah. Wow. I thought, well, I'd pull out my old Jimi Hendrix chops and I turned that on and
great.
So between the echo and the tube screamer, I got plenty of
all the weirdness you need.
Yeah, you know, use my whammy bar and make. Hey.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah.
And then you got the Rickenbacker.
Yeah, we recorded an album out at Mike Campbell's home studio, which is the studio that the Traveling Wilburys used mostly.
Really.
And. Yeah, it was really great because had all his guitars
all
there.
Are there like hanging guitars?
No, that's the clubhouse.
Okay.
Mike's studio is a different. He has his guitars in this hallway.
Okay.
And they're just, you know, like behind a curtain. You just pull them out of the rack there, and so we recorded this song that Marty had written, and we started playing it all the time, and I was like, well, I used his old Rickenbacker 12 string that he used on all the Tom Petty records.
Right.
You know? It was a 360. And I was like, man, thanks for letting me use that, you know? And see, this would be, oh, it's not plugged in. Huh.
Yeah. I'm no engineer, but I think you got to plug them in.
And so anyway, you know, we recorded it, and then it quickly sort of like, Marty's like, yeah, we need to be playing this song live every night, you know? And like, well, I need to be buying a 12 string. And I walked into second gear when Book had second gear over in Berry Hill, and this was hanging on the wall.
Meant to be.
And it was a Friday afternoon, and I had a gig on the road on Saturday with Marty, and he said, well, there's a guy that really wants that thing. I said, man, this thing sounds really good. But anyway, the parts I'm playing are, they're very sort of Birds. It's pretty much a ripoff of the Birds. That kind of stuff,
yeah.
You know? And I was like, man, I gotta have a good Rick. I don't, you know, I tried some, you know, I went around town and saw play some new ones, but then this one was hanging on the wall. I was like, what is that thing? He says, well, we're not really sure, but there's a guy that wants it really bad. And it was a Friday, and he said, just take it and try it out this weekend. Tell me what you think. But check this thing out. It's really weird. There's no.
Yeah.
But it's still hollow under there, but there's no sound hole.
Wow.
You know?
Like a one-off.
And it has a. That's Martin style trim down the back, which is not ever seen on a Rickenbacker guitar.
Yeah.
And the neck dates to 1969, but the pickups were like early 80s pickups. And, there was, he tried to trace it and he couldn't find anything about it. He finally found it that it had gone through a music store called Mike's Music, not the Mike's Music in Cincinnati, but one that no longer exists in Pennsylvania in the early 80s. There was a Mike's Music in Pennsylvania somewhere. So anybody out there know where anything about Mike's Music in Pennsylvania, please contact me. But anyway, we think maybe it was an employee-made guitar. We're not really sure. You know, but it's a great guitar. And so I came back to second gear on Monday without the guitar. And I had my checkbook and I said,
said, you're not getting it back.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really a good one. It's really just a really good sounding Rick. Oh. And
The last piece of gear is that Martin.
Yeah, it's a Martin D45. Yeah, I got this one from my good buddy Rob McNerlin, sold this to me. I think it's an 88, you know, and it's just... You know, when you pick up a D45, first thing you do is start playing Neil Young songs.
Sure. How can you not?
Yeah. You go right to it, right? You know, but it's written.
What pickup did you put in it? Whatever came in it?
Dave Johnson put it in there.
We know Dave Johnson.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's called a Matrix.
Okay.
Is that a Fishman or is that a
Fishman.
Yeah.
Dave, if you're gonna watch this, put it in the comments.
I'm pretty sure it's a Fishman Matrix. But it sounds great plugged in.
Yeah.
It sounds really good.
Boy, hearing you guys acoustically in this room, wearing your acoustics on, God, it sounded amazing. Out front, yeah.
We have a great sound man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been with us for a long time. We'd be nothing without him. We might as well quit if he ever quits. Yeah, it's just a really good guitar.
Hey, what picks do you use?
That's a Dunlop. 0.96.
On the thick side?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first guy that I ever knew who played guitar was Johnny Smith. He was a friend of my dad's.
Yeah.
My dad was not a musician, but he was a big fan of Johnny's. And Johnny lived in Colorado Springs, and we lived in Denver, and Johnny would come up to Shaner's every Saturday night and play. And when I bought my first guitar, he gave me what kind of pick he uses, which was a heavy Fender jazz pick.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, that's what I use. So for years, that's what I use. And then I got a bigger one.
Yeah. God, no wonder you're so good. I mean, growing up with Johnny Smith.
Well, my dad would sit me down before I had a guitar and say, I'm going to take you downtown. Have my friend Johnny show you how it's really done. He plays every Saturday night. Now, you sit and watch Johnny. And I'd be like this far away sitting there watching him, and he'd be sitting there playing his Johnny Smith Gibson, you know. God. The nicest guy in the world.
Oh, how cool. Yeah. Well, I'm going to bring my daughter here tonight, and hopefully that same kind of inspiring moment, I'm hoping.
All right. Yeah. My daughters will be here tonight, too.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah.
Well, Kenny, thanks a million, man. Just great seeing you.
Man, thank you.
Yeah. It's
great to see you.
Okay, fabulous superlatives coming towards you somewhere.